Picture San Francisco in 2007. The iPhone had just launched, Facebook was still college only, and two separate groups of entrepreneurs were about to accidentally create the fastest growing companies in history. One team was so broke, they survived on leftover cereal they'd designed themselves. The other was led by a guy who'd just sold his previous startup for $75 million, but couldn't get a cab on a rainy night. These weren't your typical Silicon Valley success stories. No Ivy League pedigrees or trust funds here. What they had instead was something far more valuable, an almost delusional refusal to accept that the world couldn't work differently. When Brian Chesky moved to San Francisco, he was chasing a dream inspired by Walt Disney's leap to Hollywood. Instead, he found himself broke, sleeping on an air mattress, and wondering how to pay rent. During a design conference when hotels were fully booked, he and roommate Joe Gebbia had a wild idea: rent out air mattresses in their apartment and make breakfast for guests. They called it Air Bed and Breakfast. Three people actually showed up and paid $80 each. Meanwhile, Garrett Camp was solving a different problem: San Francisco's abysmal taxi service. After selling StumbleUpon for $75 million, Camp could afford any ride he wanted, except he couldn't actually get one. His vision was simple: everyone's private driver summoned through your phone. He recruited his friend Travis Kalanick, another successful entrepreneur, to help build it. Uber and Airbnb didn't just build apps, they rewired how we think about ownership, trust, and what it means to share resources with strangers. Turning air mattresses into a real business proved nearly impossible. Even after recruiting Nathan Bletcherchick, a Harvard programming genius who'd built a spam software empire as a teenager, investors couldn't grasp why anyone would sleep in a stranger's home. The 2008 financial crisis made everything worse. With maxed out credit cards and no funding, the founders hit the trough of sorrow, that brutal phase where novelty fades and reality bites hard. Their solution was brilliantly absurd: limited edition cereal boxes called Obawa O's and Cap'n McCain's sold for $40 each during the 2008 election. The stunt generated media buzz and just enough cash to survive. Paul Graham of Y Combinator called them cockroaches, his highest compliment for founders who refuse to die. Meanwhile, Uber's first development team worked from a childhood bedroom in Colima, Mexico. Oscar Salazar convinced friends to build the dispatch system for equity stakes, eventually worth millions. After seeing a Wired article about GPS apps, they pivoted to iPhone with a real-time map showing cars moving across the screen. Kalanick's tweet seeking an entrepreneurial product manager led Ryan Graves to respond with what became the single most lucrative tweet in internet history. Being first means nothing without execution. Couchsurfing launched in 2004, 5 years before Airbnb, but founder Casey Fenton ran it chaotically. No real office, scattered volunteers, outdated website. When co-founder Hoffer pushed to monetize, Fenton refused, believing money would dilute the purity of the experience. In 2008, Airbnb's founders picked Hoffer's brain over pizza. He sensed the threat, but stayed loyal, a choice which probably cost me $1 billion. Zimride raised $7.2 million trying to fill empty car seats for long trips, but couldn't scale. In early 2012, inspired by Uber, founders Logan Green and John Zimmer pivoted to short urban rides, rebranding as Lyft. Disruption required the right model, timing, and ruthless execution. Nathan Bletcherchick's teenage spam software business made him Airbnb's growth hacker. They deployed controversial tactics: automated emails from female-named Gmail accounts recruiting Craigslist hosts, and tools letting users cross-post to Craigslist, injecting superior Airbnb listings into their ecosystem. Bletcherchick pioneered targeted Facebook ads. By fall 2010, Airbnb had booked 700,000 nights across 8,000 cities. In October 2010, four plainclothes officers served Uber with a cease and desist order threatening $5,000 per ride and 90 days in jail. San Francisco's taxi regulation director, Christine Hayashi, had tried reforming the dysfunctional cab system with its 15-year medallion waiting list. When taxi drivers complained about Uber, she saw a clear violation. Only taxis could pick up street hails and use government-certified meters. Kalanick's response established Uber's playbook: comply minimally while continuing operations. They dropped cab from their name and registered as a limo company, but changed nothing else. This principled confrontation became Uber's defining strategy, the belief that superior service would force regulators to accommodate them. By 2013, when California's Public Utilities Commission targeted Lyft and Sidecar, Lyft hired former Commissioner Susan Kennedy, who persuaded regulators to create new rules rather than shut down services. You can't put the genie back in the bottle, she argued, crystallizing Travis's law. Airbnb shifted from resistance to collaboration. In Portland, it struck a landmark deal. Hosts would pay reduced fees and undergo inspections, while Airbnb collected the 11.5% lodging tax without revealing identities. This shared cities initiative spread to San Francisco, Chicago, and Amsterdam. But in New York, negotiations collapsed when the company became politically radioactive, facing opposition from the hotel industry and unions. Despite his diplomatic persona, Chesky proved as determined a fighter as Kalanick. Summer 2011 brought Airbnb's first major crisis when host EJ published a blog post describing how guests ransacked her apartment. The company's initial response was defensive and tone-deaf. Chesky eventually crafted a comprehensive solution: 24-hour customer service, doubled support staff, a trust and safety department, and identity verification systems. The centerpiece was the Airbnb guarantee, initially $50,000. Investor Mark Andreessen suggested adding a zero, later growing to $1 million, insured by Lloyd's of London. Chesky wrote a heartfelt letter stating, "Over the last 4 weeks, we have really screwed things up," and included his personal email. The storm subsided, though Airbnb reportedly paid EJ a substantial settlement, sealed with an NDA. Simultaneously, Airbnb battled the Samware brothers Wimdu, which had raised $90 million copying Airbnb across Europe. Chesky refused to partner, telling colleagues he would rather fight and lose than give in. He recruited Oliver Young to lead international expansion, rapidly opening offices across Europe, Moscow, Delhi, and Sao Paulo. Each country manager received an office in a box with ping pong tables and inspirational books to maintain Airbnb's culture. Despite Wimdu's head start, Airbnb's stronger technology and global network prevailed. By June 2012, Airbnb had booked 10 million cumulative nights, with Europe becoming its largest market. "This is when I became CEO in a meaningful way," Chesky reflected. By 2015, Uber faced its fiercest rival in Didi Dache, founded by former Alibaba salesman Cheng Wei. When rival Kwaidi Dache secured Alibaba funding in 2013, Cheng raised money from Tencent, sparking a brutal proxy war, with both services burning millions daily on driver subsidies. While Didi and Kwaidi battled, Uber quietly launched People's Uber in Chinese cities, securing crucial Baidu partnership for funding and maps. With competitors distracted by their merger, Uber claimed 30% market share. But challenges mounted: taxi strikes, police raids, and government rulings against private drivers. By 2016, both companies burned over $1 billion annually on subsidies. After frantic fundraising, they negotiated peace. Uber exited China for a 17% Didi stake plus $1 billion investment, valuing Uber's position at $7.2 billion against its $2 billion investment. Though Kalanick surrendered the market, this global mega unicorn deathmatch revealed crucial limits. Even with billions and sophisticated technology, local knowledge and government relationships proved decisive. You can't bulldoze through every market, especially against opponents who understand local dynamics better than you ever will. In January 2017, Uber operated during a taxi strike protesting Trump's travel ban, triggering the hashtag #DeleteUber campaign that cost hundreds of thousands of users. Former engineer Susan Fowler published a viral post detailing sexual harassment, being propositioned by her manager on day one, with HR dismissing her complaints. More scandals followed: executive resignations, reports of Kalanick visiting a Korean escort bar, and most damaging, revelations that executives obtained and discussed confidential medical records of an India rape victim. Six senior executives demanded Kalanick's removal. Marketing surveys revealed he'd become America's most unpopular CEO. On June 20, 2017, Benchmark Partners confronted Kalanick in Chicago, demanding his resignation. Uber hired Dara Khosrowshahi from Expedia, a diplomatic, humble leader. The contrast with Airbnb proved instructive. While both disrupted industries, Airbnb's community-focused culture created sustainability, while Uber's aggression imploded. The lesson? Relationships, ethics, and humility matter as much as winning.